And thanks, Malik. I am the coach, Butch McAdams, and you're listening to another edition of your show, the sports show of the DMV, in and out of sports. In and Out of Sports is sponsored in part by our great friends at Horton's Funeral Service, the DMV, AIA, Bethesda Theater, Joyful Signing, The Power of Trust, Fresh Community Farms of Brandywine, Maryland, and Martin's Caterers, Tacoma Station, the BEYA Conference 2024, Buddies of DC, Alumni for Life, and Rod Davis Remax Excellence. And folks, what a show we have today. And if you are a Washington football historian, get your recorders out, because we are going to drop some dimes, some nickels, some quarters, and all types of pearls in the next few segments. But before we do that, let's get our juices flowing, and let's get a little inspirational music. All right, and so we have that, and so that'll give you a clue on what we're going to talk about. And so, without further ado, let's bring on the author of the book that has just dropped, Perfect Christmas Gift, Perfect Gift for the Ending of the 23 Season and the Playoffs for NFL, Mike Richmond, the author of the book, George Allen, A Football Life. Hey, Mike, welcome back. The book has finally dropped in a very appropriate time. But I would be remiss if I didn't start off. Look, this Washington team currently is in disarray. And this would be the ideal situation for George Allen some 30, 40 or more years ago, because he was known to come into organizations and franchises that were in disarray and turn it around, correct?
Absolutely, Butch. By the way, good morning to you, and thank you very much for having me on once again, and I look forward to discussing my new book and wonderful introduction. Allen resuscitated the two NFL teams that he coached. He coached the Los Angeles Rams from 1966 through 70 and the Redskins from 71 through 77. When he took over the Rams in 66, they had been bad to mediocre over most of the previous decade. So that was one of his reclamation projects. And then he did the same thing with the Redskins. His first season with the Redskins, 1971, they finished 9-4-1, made the playoffs for the first time since the Sammy Baugh era in 1945, been like a quarter century, and then took them to Super Bowl VII the following season. All told, in his NFL career, he made the playoffs seven seasons with the Redskins five times. And he had a history of resuscitating these NFL teams. That he did it throughout his career, and actually to the very last season that he coached, Long Beach State in Los Angeles. That was his last season of coaching, 1990. Long Beach State hadn't had a winning season in 5 years. They were about to drop the program for financial reasons, and he led them to a winning record. They finished 6-5 that year, and then unfortunately he passed away about a month after the season ended. But yeah, that was George Allen. He had a knack for doing that, for resuscitating those organizations.
And he also had a knack, and we can get into this later, Mike, but he had a knack for scouting and had an eye for talent. And I, for the most part, have been against head coaches having dual roles, meaning the head coach and then the general manager. But George Allen did a fantastic job. I don't know of anyone that I can speak of that had the dual role that produced more than Coach Allen.
Right. Well, he had a very keen eye for both veteran players, veteran talent, and younger players as well. When he was with the Chicago Bears as the head talent scout from 1959 to 65, he produced some draft picks, that three of whom are in the Hall of Fame today: Mike Ditka in 1961 and Butkus and Sayers at 65. And that 65 draft, by the way, has to be considered one of the greatest in NFL history, in addition to Butkus and Sayers, who were first ballot Hall of Fame inductees. He drafted an offensive lineman named Steve DeLong in the first round, who opted to play for the San Diego Chargers in the AFL. Also a running back named Jim Nance in the fourth round, who decided to play for the Patriots in the AFL. He was a two-time Pro Bowler, two-time All-Pro. So, and then when he got to the head coaching ranks, he did it again, and mostly with veteran players. He had some acquisitions in L.A., like Roger Brown, who replaced Rosie Grier when Grier went down as one of the fearsome foursome. Grier went down in the 67 preseason. He had Roger Brown, like, on his Rolodex, the great defensive Detroit Lions defensive lineman. He got him, and the fearsome foursome kept rolling along. And that 67 team, in my opinion, was Allen's greatest team as an NFL coach. With the Redskins, he had some phenomenal acquisitions, too. Kenny Houston has to go down as one of his greatest acquisitions. Houston had been an several-time All-Pro with the Houston Oilers, and then with the Redskins, he was a five-time Pro Bowler, and, of course, he had that memorable tackle of Walt Garrison on the goal line in that 73 game. We just passed the 50-year mark of that. But that 73 Monday night game, that 14-7 Redskins win. He also had some pretty good rookie draft picks, even though the Redskins didn't pick in among the first five rounds while Allen coached the Redskins. He had Mike Thomas, who was NFL Rookie of the Year in 1975. He was like a fifth-round pick. He was their highest pick. So yeah, Allen had a very, very keen eye for talent, both young and old.
And if he were, hypothetically, let's have some fun here, if he were to come in with this Washington Commanders team, and I'm certain that you've watched them play some games this year, how long do you think it would take him, under today's rules, with the salary cap and all, a little more teams, how long do you think it would take him to turn this team around?
Not long. I don't think it would happen like in his first season necessarily, but he would still, I think he would be able to acclimate himself to the game today. I don't think that you could say that the game would have necessarily passed him by. So maybe two seasons. I think he would turn this team around, and first of all, he would put much more emphasis on the lines. I mean, in the 70s when he coached, of course, you didn't have the Hogs at that time, you know, the famous Hogs offensive line from the Gibbs era, but he still put so much emphasis on the offensive and defensive lines. And even today, that is where the game is won, in my opinion. Like, for instance, today's Washington team, we've got really good playmakers on the offensive side of the ball. I mean, great receivers, Terry McLaurin and Dotson, and running back and Brian Robinson. We've got Howell is a very, very promising young quarterback. So we've got really good playmakers, but where's the line? Where's the offensive line? I mean, I think Allen would be putting a lot more emphasis on the lines, both offense and defense, which I think would play a major role in turning this franchise around. I think any new coach that comes in, whoever the new coach is after Rivera, it has to put so much more emphasis on the lines, particularly the offense. We've got defensive linemen, although I was very sorry to lose Montez Sweat and Chase Young for that matter, too. But we need so much more, greater offensive linemen. And we've had so many in-house. I mean, Sheriff and Trent Williams, and, you know, we let them walk.
And
Morgan Moses as well, right. He's thriving now. So,
absolutely.
I mean, that's been one of the major problems with this team in recent decades. We have these players who we've acquired through the draft and trades for that matter too. But so many of these young guys have been in-house with us, and then we let them go. I mean, and then they thrive with other teams. I mean, it's so humiliating and frustrating.
And coaches. And coaches, assistant coaches.
Absolutely, yes.
Yeah, wow. Yeah.
Rams coach McVay and LaFleur with the Packers, and Kyle Shanahan with the 49ers, and I know there are others. Wasn't the Dolphins coach in-house as well?
Yes.
Yeah, he was. Dolphins coach was here too. Was the Bengals coach here at one time too? No, the Vikings coach. The Vikings coach was here.
Right. Yes, yes. On our newsmaker line, Mike Richmond, the author of the book, George Allen, A Football Life. And, Mike, why did you write this book? What motivated you to write a book on one of the more interesting figures, certainly in the Washington sports history, and maybe in the NFL of all time?
Well, Butch, I grew up in the Washington area, Montgomery County, and I became a staunch Redskins fan in 1971 when Allen came here to coach the team. I remember a few things here and there from the 60s. My father took me to a few games, but it was really when Allen came to coach here in 71 that, I became hooked on that team, and, I would, have these major emotional swings based on how well they did on a Sunday. And so those Allen was my coach. Those were my players. I went to the two playoff games in 72, Packers and Cowboys. Those were his two greatest wins as a head coach, and two greatest wins, of course, here in D.C. before he lost to Super Bowl VII. And at the same time, I chose journalism. I acquired an interest in writing as a kid, and I chose journalism as a career, and I've embarked on several literary projects, all Redskins-related. The Redskins Encyclopedia, the Redskins Vault, and Joe Gibbs' Enduring Legacy. I felt George Allen, though, was the missing piece. I really wanted to embark on a project on him and just learn more about him. I mean, I knew the things that we all know about, his affinity for veteran players, his trading the same draft picks for different players. I mean, I knew all that stuff about him, and and that he had done remarkably well in his previous coaching stint with the Los Angeles Rams. But I wanted to really take a deep dive into the gentleman, and I learned so much about his personality and just various anecdotes here and there about him. I mean, the Allen family was wonderful. They were so much help. The book would not be as compelling as it is without the help of the Allen family, led by George Felix Allen, his oldest child. And then Bruce Allen was a tremendous help. Jennifer, I interviewed Greg as well, another Allen kid, and also briefly interviewed Etty Allen, his wife, before she passed away. So, just wanted to learn a whole lot more about this guy. Who was this coaching legend, basically, I asked myself. And, what was it about him that, drove him to become such a successful coach in the NFL? I mean, today he's third all-time in winning percentage among coaches with at least 100 regular season wins. So he definitely deserved a definitive biography, and I thought I was the person to do that.
Well, I'm glad you did, because it's so interesting, and we're going to talk a lot about it. I didn't know that George played football. Talk about that. And also, he served in the military during World War II. Talk about that as well.
Yes, sure. He was in high school, Lake Shores High School, outside the Detroit, or in the Detroit area. He was a really good athlete. He played basketball, football, and he ran track. So, and those football teams, by the way, were really, really good. I mean, they had a phenomenal record in his 3 years there. And he played intramurals in college as well. I think it was mostly basketball there. But in his youth, by the way, he grew up during the Great Depression, which is where he developed this tremendous work ethic. I mean, he was the primary breadwinner in the family for a period of time, because his father was he suffered a terrible accident on the assembly line in Detroit. And so he was the breadwinner in the family. So that's where he developed his work ethic. And he also, at the same time, acquired a love for sports, and particularly, and this was a very daring thought during the Great Depression, but he thought he'd like to coach someday. You know, at that time, you would think that people would consider something more practical, like law or, medicine or whatever, business, some type of business. But he thought of coaching, and sure enough, when he got to the college level, he Well, he made his way to the University of Michigan. Michigan was his last stop among his colleges, and he got an opportunity through Fritz Kreisler, the famous Michigan coach, to coach the 150-pound midget team at Michigan. That was his first coaching opportunity. In terms of the war, during World War II, he was part of the Navy V-12 program. He never went into any combat situation, but the Navy V-12 was formed to train for future naval officers. And so,
but Mike, hold it right there. We're going to take a short commercial pause. And on the other side, please continue, because there is a lot to talk about. I want you to continue with the biography, so to speak, of Coach Allen, and then talk about the relationship that he had with Papa Bear, George Halas. On our newsmaker line, Mike Richmond, the author of the book, George Allen, A Football Life. More to come.
This is Congressman Glenn Ivey. I'm working for you, putting people over politics. We're working to lower prescription drug costs, including capping insulin at $35 a month for seniors. We're growing the middle class by investing in America and making our community safer by supporting common sense gun safety legislation. For more information, visit my website at ivy.house.gov or call my office at 240-906-6262.
Paid for by official funds authorized by the House of Representatives.
Attention, attention, all you line and hand dancers. Are you having a big dance party and would like for it to be seen on TV? Then give the Moon Man a call. The Moon Man Dance Connection TV show will bring their cameras to your location and videotape your dance party. And then you can sit back and relax, enjoying watching yourself party on TV. And listen, my friends, also on Saturday afternoon at 4 p.m., you can now watch the Dance Connection from Philadelphia. That is correct, 4 p.m. each and every Saturday. They are now streaming online at myphillycam.com. That's myphillycam.com. Philadelphia each and every Saturday at 4 p.m. And just remember, my friends, Dance Connection would like to bring their video cameras to your dance party and videotape your dance party for you. You can find out more about our upcoming event. You can friend me on Facebook at Willie B. Moonman. That's Willie B. Moonman, or call me at 443-857-2771.
Mr. Rogers said, look for the helpers. You can always find people who are helping. Thank you to all the first responders who put their lives in danger to help us when my brothers and sisters and mom and dad and grandpa and grandma need them.
Thank you, first responders.
This is what I signed up for as a first responder. I am constantly worried about being exposed to this virus and potentially bringing it back to my home and my family. I'm going to continue going to work day in and day out and providing help to those that need it.
We look out for the helpers because they look out for us.
Thank you, first responders.
Thank you, first responders.
Thank you, first responders.
Love you.
Be safe, look after yourself, and look after one another. Thanks.
Learn how you can help first responders in your community by texting BRAVE to 24365.
A promise is potent. Born of intention, fueled by commitment, it's seeing things through, always showing up. And we know a thing or two about promises here at Susan G. Komen. Over 40 years ago, we locked arms with you toward one vision, a world without breast cancer. By investing in life-saving research and standing up for patient rights, we are shifting the system so all people everywhere get the care they deserve. Because if you've just been diagnosed and don't know where to turn, we've got you. If you can't afford the treatment you need, we've got you. And if you are driven to raise money to honor the best friend you've just lost, we have a place for you here. Because of you, we're supporting those who need help today while tirelessly searching for tomorrow's cures. Ending breast cancer needs all of us. Visit Komen.org and be a part of the Susan G. Komen community today.
1450 WOL.
Yeah. Let's go back to our newsmaker line. Mike Richmond is aboard, the author of the book. Oh, you got to pick it up, especially if you are a football fan and a Washington football fan. It is George Allen, A Football Life. And, Mike, on the other side, you were talking about the early life of George Allen. Please continue.
Yeah, sure. So he was part of the Navy V-12 program during his several of his college stops, which included Marquette, and then the last one was Princeton for the Navy V-12. Well, at and then the program was to train future naval officers that would eventually enter the war. So his last stop in that program was at Princeton University. And that's where he met Albert Einstein. See, Allen was a really he was daring. I mean, he really had the mindset where nothing was impossible. So one Sunday morning after church, he got on the bus with a buddy of his, and they went to Einstein's house. Einstein was an adjunct professor there, and they knock on the door, and this woman comes down. It was Einstein's assistant. She says with a heavy German accent, "Can I help you too?" And so Allen says, "I'm here to see Professor Einstein. I'd like to challenge him to a game of checkers." See, Allen was actually a really good checkers player, and he thought he could beat Einstein. You know, a genius, of course, who was you know, his theory of relativity was part of the building of the atomic bomb. And so Allen wanted to challenge him to a game of checkers. So Einstein comes running down the stairs, and Allen says, "Professor, I'd like to play you in checkers." Einstein says, "You know, people say a whole lot of things about me, but I'm not really a checkers player. But anyway, did you bring a board?" So Allen, of all things, he forgot to bring a checkers board. He thought Einstein had one. Einstein didn't have a board. But the story is that it was so antithetical to the way Allen would carry himself throughout life. He was so preparation oriented. He knew so much about the opposing teams, for instance. You know, his belief was he wanted to know more about his opponents than they actually knew about themselves, which, you know, it's really impossible to do that. But that approach that he took in practice and meetings and that study of films, you know, burning the midnight oil, things like that, that really paid off in so many games. But anyway, so didn't have a board. They didn't play checkers. So on his way out of the house, Einstein makes this big sound, boom, and he spreads his arms. And Allen didn't know it at the time, but Einstein was signaling that the atomic bomb was coming. This was like late 44, early 45, so the bomb wasn't dropped like, you know, for like 8 or 9 months. But that's what Einstein was signaling as Allen and his friend left the house. So anyway, that was the Navy V-12 program. And after that, he advanced to Michigan. Michigan was his final stop among the colleges that he attended, and that's where he got his first assistant coaching opportunity, like I described earlier, that midget team, the 150-pound midget team at Michigan.
Mm-hmm. And now, how did he and Papa Bear, George Halas, how did they connect?
Yeah, so Allen had two head coaching stops in college. So after Michigan, he got his first college job at Morningside in Sioux City, Iowa. He coached there for 3 years. Then he coached at Whittier in the Los Angeles area. He coached there for 6 years. At Whittier, he was basically forced out after the 1956 season. There were some things that the administration didn't like that he was doing, and the offense was kind of boring. You know, it was like 3 yards in a cloud of dust, and as I wrote in the book, the players didn't really like that. So the belief is that he got forced out. So he was out of coaching for about a year, and he was selling golf clubs, he was selling weighted footballs. Well, with the footballs, he made his way into several of the training camps of NFL teams, one of which was the Chicago Bears. So while at the Bears training camp, he came in contact with Halas. And Halas initially did not bring him on the staff, but Halas hired him as a spy because Allen, right after Whittier, he was an assistant for 1 year with the Los Angeles Rams. And then he was let go of that opportunity as well. And so he knew about the Los Angeles Rams. And so Halas brought him in as a spy because the Bears had two late season games in 1958 against the Rams. So Alan was a spy, and actually that was one of the bad things that Alan learned from Hallis is spying, because Alan became known as the NFL's master spy in later years. He was in charge of espionage missions, particularly when it came to the Dallas Cowboys.
Oh, yeah.
That's how he first came in contact with Hallis.
Mm-hmm. And that when I look at the relationship and the end result with Alan and Hallis in the early 60s, it was kind of parallel to the 80s with Ditka and Buddy Ryan. Wasn't it very similar?
In terms of the antagonistic nature of the relationship?
In terms of...
you mean the 60s? Yeah, the defense, yes.
But in terms of the defensive coordinator having as much power and influence, in some cases more, than the head coach?
Yes, that's a very good point, Butch. So Alan was initially hired in 1959 by the Bears as their head talent scout, but he was promoted to defensive coordinator in the 63 offseason, which is when he really took over that defense, and that 63 Bears defense was known to pave the way for that 63 championship. We're about to approaching the 60-year mark of that game, actually. They beat the Giants 14-10. So, yes, Alan, you could ask any player, Bears player who's alive today, and I interviewed several of them for the book, they would give Alan full credit for that championship win. That defense that he built, that 63 defense, is known as one of the greatest in NFL history. It relinquished like 144 points in a 14-game season. And in fact, that defense is often compared to the 85 Bears defense, like you just mentioned, that Buddy Ryan, you know, of course, he was the defensive coordinator of that team, and Ditka was the head coach. And Ryan actually overshadowed Ditka in many ways because that defense was so great. And in fact, in another similarity, Alan was carried off the field by his players after the 63 championship game. By the way, Hallis was not. After the 85 Super Bowl win, both Buddy Ryan and Ditka were carried off the field. And but that's actually a great analogy, those two teams. And it's often talked about today. That comparison is made by like Ed Obradovich, who I interviewed the book, the Bears defensive tackle from that 63 team. He said he talks about it with Dan Hampton today. I think they're on a they have a radio show together in the Chicago area. Hampton,
right.
You know, Danimal was on that 85 Bears defense, one of the great players on that defense. So they often talk about they go back and forth in terms of which defense was better. But that's a great comparison.
And then talk about after that victorious season in 63, I remember watching that game, and boy, they beat up Y.A. Tittle, something fierce. I mean, something fierce. But then, as you alluded to earlier, the Rams reached out to Alan to be their head coach, but Hallis initially prevented it legally, but then he released Alan. Talk a little bit about that.
Yes. Yeah, so after the 63 championship, Alan was the hot name on the coaching market. Teams wanted him as their head coach. But it wasn't until really after the 65 season. I mean, Alan was getting very antsy about the whole situation. He wanted that opportunity. He was 46 years old after the 65 season, so he wanted his opportunity. So the Los Angeles Rams had just fired their coach, and Alan was offered the job. Dan Reeves, the Rams owner, hired him as the coach. But Hallis did not like it. He took it personally, and he wanted Alan to remain on his staff. See, Hallis would never guarantee in writing that Alan would succeed him as the Bears head coach. Alan claimed over the years that Hallis made that promise verbally, but there was nothing in writing. So Alan wanted that opportunity to become a head coach, and what Hallis did, he got a little jealous, and he wanted Alan on his staff, and there was also something in Alan's Bears contract, a stipulation that said he held this proprietary information about the Bears that could not be shared with any other teams. So Halas took him to court claiming breach of contract. And the judge eventually ruled for Halas. But when that happened, Halas stood up and said, listen, case is over. George Allen is free to go to whatever team he wants to go and become the head coach. Halas had won the case in principle, but then he let Allen go. So, but over the years, I mean, Halas held this grudge against George Allen. And when that Bears job came open after the 81 season, Allen was very interested in that job. He wrote George Halas letters saying, you know, I hope you can consider me for this job. But Halas refused to do it, and he hired Mike Ditka at that point. So, but Halas was just acting like a petulant child after that.
Hold it right there. We're going to take another pause, and please continue about the Halas-Allen relationship. And Allen, I had a chance to talk with Mike Bass, former player, and he just spoke so highly of Coach Allen, talked about how he was certainly a player's coach, and he was, but he had adverse relationships with owners. Got along with the players, but not with the owners. So we'll talk about that just ahead. Stay with us.
Sure thing.
Looking for top-notch personal protection? The Smith & Wesson Equalizer is here to level the playing field. Easy-to-rack slide, easy-to-control ergonomic grip. It's designed for you. With a 10, 13, and 15-round magazine included, size up for better control or size down for easier concealment. Don't miss out on the opportunity to upgrade your safety. Visit your local dealer now. To learn more about the Equalizer, visit smith-wesson.com. Smith & Wesson, empowering Americans. All capacity sizes may not be available in your jurisdiction. Be sure to check your local laws and regulations.
Come join William Jones, founder of the Afrofuturism Network, on his new show, Into the Afroverse. He will be talking about all things Afrofuturistic. He'll be talking sci-fi, fantasy, gaming, comics, and, of course, Black people's place in the past, present, and the future. Guests will include artists, writers, creators, thinkers, and futurists. It will be fun, entertaining, enlightening, and educational, so tune in and buckle up as we journey into the Afroverse. Tuesday, 10 to 10:30 a.m. on WOL, where information is power.
Are you excited about being a new grandmother?
Of course I am. A little intimidated, too.
Why?
Taking care of a baby today is so different than when I had you.
But, Mom, you did great with me.
Thanks, son. But I put you on your stomach to sleep.
Right. But now we know that babies should always be placed on their backs to sleep for naps and at night to reduce the risk of sudden infant death syndrome, or SIDS.
You also slept with blankets and toys in your crib.
True, but now we know to keep everything out of the crib except for my sweet baby girl. No blankets, pillows, or other soft or loose items.
Daddy's going to teach Nana all the ways to keep you safe while you sleep. Yes, he is. Yes, he is.
For more tips on safe sleep for babies, visit safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. That's safetosleep.nichd.nih.gov. Sponsored by the Eunice Kennedy Shriver National Institute of Child Health and Human Development.
1450 WOL.
Let's go back to our newsmaker line. We're talking George Allen, A Football Life. Our guest is Mike Richmond. And Mike, okay, another chapter. Allen goes to the L.A. Rams, and boy, he established himself. And I remember that. I think it was that 67 Ram team, and they were awesome.
Right. I think that was his greatest team in his 12 years of NFL coaching, even better than the 72 Redskins. I mean, he had everything going on that team. That was a terrific defense. I think they allowed 196 points, number one in the league that year. They had the fearsome foursome was operating on all cylinders. I mean, that Deacon Jones – I mean, he was just dropping quarterbacks left and right with the sack totals. I mean, he was just Merlin Olsen and those guys and Ed Medert, safety. And, and offense. But, see, here's a very interesting point, a very interesting contrast with the Redskins teams. Roman Gabriel, his quarterback, Roman Gabriel was slowly – he was gradually becoming one of the best quarterbacks in the league at that point. I wouldn't call him necessarily an elite quarterback that year, but he was getting close. It wasn't until 1969 that's when he became MVP of the league. But 67 was a great season for Roman Gabriel, which is really what Allen didn't have in Washington. And I made this point in the book that with Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer, his first four seasons, he had Jurgensen on the downside of his career, and he was injury riddled throughout that 4-year period. Kilmer was a great game manager. He made the Pro Bowl in 72 when the Redskins went to the Super Bowl that year. He was a great game manager. He was a fiery quarterback. The players rallied around him, but I wouldn't necessarily count on him to make that, you know, to have the great quarterback skills to make that push through the postseason. He wasn't really.
But we saw that in the Super Bowl. I mean, we saw that, and I still believe that if, and I know Sonny, as you stated, was well advanced in his career, but I still believe if Sonny Jurgensen had not been injured, that Washington would have won that game.
That's a valid point. You know, the thing about Jurgensen is when Allen became the coach in 71, he was very excited to have Sonny Jurgensen as its starting quarterback. This whole story about how, you know, Allen favored Kilmer the whole time. I mean, that's kind of it's misleading in a way, because Sonny was going to be a starting quarterback. He got injured in that 71 preseason in that Dolphins game. He had a separated shoulder or something in that 71 preseason. So luckily, Allen had acquired Kilmer. The Kilmer was actually his first veteran acquisition after he became head coach. So he had Kilmer there, and Kilmer, he played well that season, that 71 season. It was very unfortunate, actually, that Charlie Taylor went down with that broken ankle, because I think the Redskins would have made a stronger push through the playoffs that year, probably. But Kilmer had a really good season in 71. But, yeah, your point is valid. If Jurgensen had been there much healthier through that 4-year period or even longer, I think Allen would have done much better with his teams. He didn't have that elite quarterback with the Redskins. So the distinction I'm making is with the Rams, he had Roman Gabriel, that 67 team, and all throughout his Ram 5-year period. He had Roman Gabriel. He had Bernie Casey, really good receiver that 67 season, later the actor, of course. He had some really good running backs, a solid offensive line. So that 67 team, and get this, so that team finished 11-1-2 in the regular season, lost in the first round of the playoffs to the Packers. The Baltimore Colts, who were in the same division as the Rams, the Coastal Division, there was a rearranging of the divisions that year. They were in the same division. They finished 11-1-2 that year as well. They did not go to the playoffs that year. You can't. That would be unthinkable today. That just wouldn't happen.
No.
You have teams with losing records that are going to the playoffs today. I mean, 7 teams from each conference. It's just to show you the strength of the teams back then. Okay, so that 11-1-2 Colts team didn't go to the playoffs, but that Rams team had two really big emotional wins toward the end of the season. Allen beat Vince Lombardi's Packers in the next to last game of the season, 27-24, on a blocked punt late in the game, and they dominated the Colts 35-10 in the season finale that year to win the division. The winner of that game went to the playoffs, and the Rams won. And I believe that was Allen's greatest season. But he had also his 69 Rams team started 11-0, and they lost their last three regular season games, and then lost in the first round of the playoffs that year to the Vikings. So, your point earlier before we went to break last time about his antagonistic relationship with owners. He and Dan Reeves, the Rams owner, didn't get along. Reeves, this is, I think, another jealousy thing in large part, just like the Halas thing. Reeves didn't like Allen because Allen was getting all the attention for the Rams' success. Okay? So, and also Reeves didn't like Allen's big spending ways. With Allen had control of the active player roster and the trades, while Reeves controlled the draft. Okay, so Al had the freedom to acquire players and pay them what they thought they were deserving of. And so Reeves didn't really appreciate that. And so the two were at each other's throats, and Reeves fired him for the first time after the 68 season. This is one of the surreal moments in Allen's life, such as that court case with Halas. But a day after Reeves fired him, Allen called for a press conference at a Los Angeles hotel. 20 of his veteran Ram players showed up at the press conference. Deacon Jones, Merlin Olsen, other big names, Gabriel was there. He said, listen, Dan Reeves, if you don't rehire George Allen, we're quitting. So sure enough, a few weeks after that, Reeves rehired Allen as the Rams coach. And then he was basically a lame duck coach at that point, unless mm-hmm. he won the Super Bowl. And he was fired 2 years later after the 1970 season, at which point he became the Redskins coach. But then, of course, he had an antagonistic relationship with Edward Bennett Williams as well in Washington.
Right, absolutely. And, boy, Allen never had a losing season. That's phenomenal. But as I listen to you talk, and, of course, I'm aware of it by research, it seemed like, for the most part, his teams kind of fizzled towards the end of the season and in the playoffs. Do you believe it was coincidental or it was reasons for it? Now, I've heard that because he was such an emotional, rah-rah guy that, you know, every game can't be the biggest game in your life. Maybe because he had older players that toward the end of the season, you know, they were a little worn out. I don't know, but your research, Mike, what did you find?
Sure. Well, in the case of the 69 Rams team, let's take that one first. They lost their last three regular season games. And Allen, in the first loss during that three-game period, he didn't really sit anybody that game. He played his veteran or his regular roster. But after that season, Merlin Olsen was quoted as saying that they were kind of burned out toward the end. Basically that rah-rah approach, you know, this game is the biggest game of your life. I think he associated that downfall at the end of that season with that type of attitude on the part of Allen, you know, the rah-rah, you know, getting his players up for every game and then they fizzle toward the end. In Washington, I think some of that does play into it, but it's also the factor of the quarterback situation, like I explained. Also, his reliance on veteran players, I think, came back to bite him. Like early on when he came, you know, initially in 71, when he acquired the Ramskins and all those other veteran players, you know, the Washington media were saying, oh, you know, you're mortgaging the future. And that's when Allen said, hey, you know, the future is now, which is really the belief that he had in Los Angeles, too. I don't think he really broadcast it as much as he did in D.C. But certainly that paid off in Washington. The playoff season of 71, they won a roll, and then the Super Bowl season of 72. But after that, I think they plateaued. And I think, number one, it was because of the quarterback situation, but also his reliance on veteran players. Take, for instance, the Dallas Cowboys. Okay, they get Tony Dorsett in 76. They Ed Tuttle Jones in 74, Tony Dorsett in 76, Randy White in 75, Dorsett in 76. So they had like a crop of younger players that were coming in. And Allen didn't really have that. So he didn't have the youth, you know, the legs to go the extra yard, so to speak, in the postseason. So I certainly spoke about that in the book, and I presented that as a theory as to why his teams couldn't make it past the first round. After the Super Bowl season 72, they lost in the first round three times, 73, 74, and 76. They couldn't make it past the first round in those seasons. So I think all those factors combined. I think the emotional aspect of it, you know, this game is the biggest game of your life, that certainly was a factor. But I also think if they had the more of a star quarterback, I mean, with the Cowboys with Roger Staubach, the Steelers with Terry Bradshaw, and the Steelers are another great example. I mean, that 74 draft, that's really unprecedented. I mean, I think that's the greatest draft in NFL history. Four future Hall of Fame draft picks, and then a free agent acquisition, Donnie Shell, who's also in the Hall of Fame today. I mean, that's a lot of young talent coming in. And I think that really carried the Steelers through that whole 70s period.
Mm-hmm. Hold it right there. Another short pause, and we'll continue. Stay with us.
Sure.
Vision loss is not something that you feel until it happens.
Most people lose their vision from diseases like macular degeneration and glaucoma, not at birth.
With macular degeneration, you lose your central vision.
You have a blind spot right in the center of your face, so I can't actually see your face.
So even that little circle in which I could see became a big blur.
I was 65 when I first was diagnosed with glaucoma.
There were no symptoms. I had no headaches.
3 million Americans have glaucoma, and half don't even know it.
11 million people in the United States have macular degeneration.
You lose mobility, independence, changes your entire life.
So many eye disorders can be treated if caught early.
My husband tells me that I have beautiful brown eyes, and I don't want to lose that.
Make a plan today to get your eyes checked.
Visit brightfocus.org to learn more.
I had an important job, and it wasn't just a job, it was keeping my brothers and sisters safe. And coming back, it felt like kind of thrown away. It's like you're useless, you know, we don't really have a need for you now because you can't really do anything for us. That's the way I felt. If it hadn't have been for Wounded Warrior Project, I honestly don't know if I would be here. It was the camaraderie that I saw and had. It was like, I got my family back again. We all felt the connection, you know, like that brother and sisterhood.
See how Wounded Warrior Project empowers women veterans like Donna by visiting woundedwarriorproject.org/empowerwomenvets.
This is Jamie Foxx, and I want to help you take control of something very important, your health. If you're 45 or older, you need to get yourself screened for colon cancer. This disease can be very treatable when caught early, so the sooner you know what's up with your health, the better. The good news is that there's options for getting screened that are easier than you think. Get informed. Hey, we're all busy, and we think, when would we fit it in? Well, make the time. It just might mean more time with your family down the road. If you're a man or a woman, 45 or older, I'm talking to you. I've lost good friends, young friends, to colon cancer. Don't make the mistake of waiting until you have symptoms or think that you have no risk because it doesn't run in your family. Everybody needs to be screened. So take control. Get screened for colon cancer, 45 or older. Learn how. StandUpToCancer.org/colon cancer.
1450 WOL.
Let's go back and continue this conversation. George Allen, A Football Life. And, you know, again, George had a very, very, very difficult relationships with the owners. You talked about Dan Reeves in L.A. and then here with Edward Bennett Williams. It wasn't all peaches and cream here as well. Please continue.
It was not, no. Well, when Williams first hired him in 1971, you know, Allen built Redskins Park, basically. That was his vision, the original Redskins Park in Chantilly. And Allen spent $500,000 for it. Now, Williams and Jack Kent Cook was the majority owner, and Williams was the team president who ran the daily operations of the team because Cook owned the Lakers and Kings. So Allen had full authority to do whatever he wanted. It was his team, basically, less the ownership. So he called for the construction of Redskins Park, and that cost $500,000. That's when Williams made the comment at the Welcome Home Luncheon that year that, quote, I gave him an unlimited budget, and he exceeded it, that memorable quote. And from then on, it was just really it was a strained relationship between the two. They didn't like each other. Williams didn't like, again, similar to Reeves, Williams didn't like his big spinning ways and He thought the Redskins were losing money, and they played in RFK Stadium, which was one of the smallest venues in the league. Although Allen was that place was selling out at the time. It started selling out in the 60s with the Sonny Jurgensen-led offensive explosion. But that stadium was rocking in the 70s. So, but Williams thought the Redskins weren't breaking even with the finances, at least, and he told Allen that in several memos. In fact, one of which I recovered from the Allen archives at the Pro Football Hall of Fame. It's very interesting. After the 74 season, Williams wrote to Allen saying, listen, you can't keep all these high-priced players on the team. It's too much. I mean, Maxie Bond hasn't played. He's hardly played in the 4 years he's been here. You know, the great linebacker from the Rams team that they had. And before that, the Eagles. Bond hardly played in his first 4 years here. You can't keep him on the team. You can't keep Myron Patios. He's hardly playing. And you have to decide between Sonny Jurgensen and Billy Kilmer, which of those two you want to keep on the team. So the story that Allen single-handedly forced Jurgensen off the team, it's not really correct. And I explain this in the book. Williams gave him an ultimatum. He said, listen, you cannot keep both those guys on the team. Kilmer made $125,000 in 74. Jurgensen made $180,000 that year. Back then, that was a lot of money. So that's when Allen made the decision to approach Sonny and say, listen, you know, you had all these injuries the first 4 years, and we don't think you're going to – it makes sense for you to continue your career here. And Williams thought the same way, that Jurgensen was going to be he was going to continue getting injured. He was 40 years old at that point. So and he was getting nicked up here and there. So that's when Allen approached him in the Marriott or wherever, the Dulles Marriott, and told him, listen, Sonny, we're not going to renew your contract. That's how that whole thing evolved. But my initial point was the spending. Williams wrote in that memo. But interesting, and this is another narrative that I destroyed. Before the 77 season, Williams offered Allen a contract extension, a four-year extension to his original seven-year deal. And Allen just never signed the extension. He didn't like the fact that in that extension, it stripped him of his general manager duties. He was basically going to be more of a coach. And there was no stock option clause. He couldn't buy a percentage of the team, which really he sort of had that opportunity in 71. Jack Kent Cook had written a letter to him saying that he had that opportunity to buy 5% of the team, similar to what Lombardi did in 69, but he never exercised that. And the other thing was, he and his wife still owned their home in Palos Verdes Estates, Los Angeles suburb, and he wanted to go back to L.A. So, in fact, the Rams job came open after the 77 season. Chuck Knox left to coach the Bills. So that's when Allen took that Rams job for the second time. So, but the whole thing that Allen was fired after the 77 mm-hmm. season, not really. I mean, not in the technical sense. I mean, Williams just threw his arms up several weeks after the season, said, listen, I've given – this is the play on his words from 71. He said, I've given him unlimited patience, and he's exceeded it. And that's when Williams started looking for another coach. He found Jack Pardee. He hired Bobby Beathard, true general mm-hmm. manager at that point. And Allen departed for L.A., where he coached only two exhibition games, by the way. he was fired again. But I destroyed that narrative as well in the book. He wasn't really fired after the 77 season. But, yeah. He and Williams did not get along. They just ran in different circles. They different personalities. Same thing with Reeves. Totally different personality. It was known. I mean, he loved to drink, and Allen was not a drinker. I mean, he was favorite
milk was milk and ice cream and cake.
Right, and in fact, this is in the book, but Lee Meriwether, the Miss America from the 50s. She appeared, and later she played that Catwoman in the movie Batman. She appeared, it was like a photo shoot with the Rams facility in 66, and she brought Allen a gallon of ice cream. There was a picture, the Los Angeles Times took a picture. It was really hilarious, but that was Allen. He wanted to consume ice cream because it was easy to swallow, and so he could focus on his coaching responsibilities. And one of his nicknames was ice cream, by the way.
No question. And the final point, and then we'll let our listeners know how they can purchase this wonderful masterpiece. But Allen socially was ahead of the times, like a Vince Lombardi, because I was told that in most cases, teams would have even number African-American players so that they could room together. But I believe, and you correct me, but I believe under Allen, you had Brig Owens and I believe Jerry Smith were roomies.
Right. I believe, though, that that started in the 60s.
Okay.
I think Smith and Owens started rooming together in the 60s. What year, I'm not exactly sure. I was never able to pinpoint that. But I think it happened around the same time. I don't know if it was before or after that Piccolo and Sayre started rooming together as well. But
right.
I don't think what was depicted in the movie, Brian Song, is accurate. I don't think that they Sayre and Piccolo started rooming together in 65. Okay. I think it was after
sure.
that.
Okay.
So, I think Brig Owens and Jerry Smith became friends in the 60s mm-hmm. when they started playing together. So I don't know if they started rooming together with Allen or when Allen was coaching the team. But he looked out for his players. That was definitely on top of his mind, you know, the welfare of his players. And I'll tell you this, when Allen coached the Rams, I mean, they were that was the thick of the civil rights movement. And I wrote about this in the book that, you know, I wanted to figure out, you know, how the players reacted to that whole thing. Because when Allen took over the Rams, that was a year after the Watts riots in L.A. So I wanted to know how socially the players got along with each other and whether the whole civil rights movement and the racial tensions were affecting the players in any way. And I didn't get that feeling from any of the players who I spoke to. Who was it? I think it was Rosie Greer that explained to me that Allen was not colorblind. I mean, if he wanted a black player to talk, like of seniority, to talk to other black players, he would tap somebody. Like he would tap Lamar Lundy, the Rams defensive end, to talk to other black players. I mean, he knew that was important at that time. In that sense, I think Allen had a feel for the importance of the racial makeup of his teams.
Absolutely. And real quick, let our listeners know how they can purchase the book.
Sure. Thank you for asking. So if you want an author autographed copy, go to my website, MikeRichmanJournalist.com. And Richman is RICHMAN, MikeRichmanJournalist.com. I'd be happy to give you my John Hancock signature on a copy of this book, George Allen, A Football Life. I also have copies still of my first book, The Redskins Encyclopedia, and a copy of Joe Gibson's Enduring Legacy. And also the books are available too through traditional means such as Amazon. So, but thank you very much for asking, Butch. And thank you very much for having me on the show. I loved it.
I loved it as well. Thank you so much. Happy holidays to you and yours. And that was Mike Richman. Well, folks, on the other side, the big discussion sports-wise this week in the DMV was about the Caps and the Wizards. And you know how we roll here. We don't get second, third-hand information. We go to the sources. And we're so honored to once again to have someone who is a friend of the show, Councilman at Large, Washington, D.C., Kenyon McDuffie will be aboard. We're going to take a short top of the hour break. And just ahead, Councilman McDuffie will update us on what's going on. Stay with us.
WOL Washington, D.C. W240DJ Washington. 95.9 WMMJ HD3 Bethesda. WKYS HD3 Washington. WPRS HD3 Waldorf and worldwide at WOLDCNews.com.
Tomorrow on TV One.
They wanted street justice.
I can see.
It's an all-new episode of Payback.
Revenge starts with love, but often leads to hate and death.
I can see it clearly.
You took his life. You should spend the rest of yours behind bars.
No one wins. Two lives are forever changed.
Payback, all new, tomorrow at 10.
I can see it all.
On TV One.
Happy holidays, Maryland. It's been an incredible year. I'm Congressman Glenn Ivey. This holiday season, we reflect on how far we've come and set our sights upon the challenges ahead of us. Working for better schools, safer streets, and stronger communities, connecting people with transit access, expanding health care for all, and creating new opportunities for the next generation. It's not just a New Year's resolution. It's already happening, right here, right now. The best is yet to come.
Paid for by official funds authorized by the House of Representatives.
Hi, what brings you to the clinic today?
Oh, the baby's not feeling well. I think she might have a fever.
Ah, well, let's check her temp with the Exergen thermometer. You're right. These Exergen thermometers are very accurate. Reads 101.2.
Oh, gosh. Well, that Exergen thermometer sure is fast and easy to use.
Yes, and many doctors recommend Exergen for home use.
Exergen thermometers, backed by over 100 clinical studies, are available at Walgreens and participating retailers. Learn more at Exergen.com.
All over America, people are taking the national radon test. Have you? Excuse me, have you heard of radon?
Is that a gas?
Is it something that comes up out the ground or something?
It's like poison gas.
Something dangerous that you're supposed to check on to make sure it's not in your home.
Now it's your turn. Answer true or false. Radon is a radioactive gas. True, radon is a radioactive gas. True or false? The Office of the Surgeon General recommends that all homes be tested for radon. True, your home should be tested.
I didn't know that, no.
True or false, radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. True.
True, I didn't know that.
Radon is the second leading cause of lung cancer. Answer true or false. Homes with radon problems can be fixed. True. Homes with radon problems can be fixed.
So what do you do about it? I'm going to dial the number and call.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
If I don't take care of it, nobody else will.
Keep your family safe from radon. Call now.
1-800-SOS-RADON.
When it comes to making plans, you are the best. What about those round trips that you plan in advance, which are perfect on your way there and perfect on your way back? Or those meetings with friends for which you make a group chat 3 months before so that nobody or anything is missing. Or your daughter's first birthday party. You planned it with such dedication that instead of the first, it felt like our quinces. The same way you plan each detail for those moments. Start planning to protect you and your loved ones from a natural disaster. Sign up for local weather and emergency alerts. Prepare an emergency kit and make a family communications plan. Protecting your family is the best plan you can make. Get started at ready.gov/plan.
Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
Hello, my name is Andrea Delzell, and I've been using a wheelchair since I was 5 years old. If I had one message for the general public, it would be relax. Some folks get really flustered around disabled people, so they just pretend we're not there. I've actually had waiters talk to my companion and completely ignore me. People with disabilities just want the same respect and consideration as everyone else.
This is a message from United Spinal Association. Download our disability etiquette booklet at unitedspinal.org.
1450 WOL. The views and opinions of the following show do not necessarily reflect the views.